One of the most famous things I can remember was the Montreal Screwjob.
I'm a big fan of Bret the Hitman Hart and Shawn Michaels, and I can't believe what went down during the Montreal Screwjob.
This match was a long journey in itself, but 18 months
with the fans
to get it done. And the smart money is that you will never, ever see it again.
The story that unfolded, the rivalry between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. As a fan watching this, I had no idea what was going on as it was happening.
Look at this!
Oh, you're kidding me.
Michaels, are you going to try to beat Bret Hart with a sharpshooter? Yes, he is!
Watching it go down, as a fan, it kind of blended the lines of reality and who was the winner, and everyone was confused.
Are you kidding me?
And I remember watching this personally, saying, I don't think I saw him taps.
I was as shocked as Bret the Hitman Hart was, but I was not quite as upset.
Then as things unfolded and history was made, we find out he didn't taps.
What happened? What happened? Bret Hart gave up with a sharpshooter.
You saw Bret Hart go to town. He destroyed the set. He was spitting in the air. He was writing WCW, and you knew something big was going on.
Wow, you talk about controversy. This crowd is living.
I would have done whatever I had to do, so I can't go on either side of that. I take care of myself, and that's all there is to it.
The Montreal Screwjob really made me hate Vince McMahon, because I loved Bret Hart, and just the idea that Bret got screwed and that Vince was the one who did it, and it just made me think, oh gosh, what, this guy's such a I would never want to work for this guy.
Michaels with a sharpshooter has become champion, and Bret Hart is standing in disbelief.
I never thought I'd see Bret Hart in another WWE ring ever again.
About the Survivor Series between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, two men who have no love for each other personally or professionally, are going to meet one-on-one the WWF title on the line. It's almost taken an act of Congress to get this match to happen, and here's how the whole thing came to be.
It's safe to say they don't like each other.
You'd like to hit me, but you don't have the insides to do it.
It might be more accurate to state they hate each other.
Somebody's up for the survive! Now Hart is coming out of it, Shawn Michaels! It's the Survivor Series right now!
Right here. Let's go back to WrestleMania last year when I was the World Wrestling Federation champion.
I just want to say one day, Shawn Michaels, you got the click, you got whatever you want out there. And tomorrow night, you're gonna think that those 9 cheerleaders that beat you up in Syracuse, New York, you're gonna think that was breakfast at Tiffany's. Because I can promise you, for 60 minutes, you were in for the absolute worst pounding of your entire life.
It started as a show. It would end up being perhaps the greatest mano-a-mano matchup in the history of the World Wrestling Federation. They haven't met since, and the controversy that brewed in its aftermath is about to finally boil over.
If he's the same guy he was before, then yeah, I just hope I don't have to run over with my car or something, because it bothers me that much. There's something about a guy that's just cocky, that is a guy that's got a huge, huge prima donna kind of personality to him, that thinks he's better than everyone else. He's something very arrogant and obnoxious about him, and he's a guy with a big mouth.
This match, it's for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
This is an Iron Man match.
Sometimes that same thing that makes me a pain in the butt can also work for you. I did go in with confidence, but you go in knowing you have to wrestle Bret Hart. And that works two ways. One, that's Bret Hart. You know, he's not there by some mistake.
It was a huge dynamic collision of, I guess what it is a certain lack of masculinity that he'd never possessed. And, I finally just got take it anymore. The dancing and the twirling around the ring, that Mexican style wrestling is enough to make you sick.
Well, everyone knows Bret and I have a rivalry, whether it be professional or personal, but now it's to the point now where you have to think you're better than him every day.
Just because I come out here and choose to live my life openly and freely instead of putting on a facade like you does not make you a better man, Bret.
It's like, well, is the problem with me or is the problem with him? There's no problem with me. The problem's with him.
Yes, I antagonize everybody. And when you can do that, all you can do is use it to your advantage. I have the ability to push the buttons of people that would never, ever lose their temper.
Is he challenging me? Right now, regularly, I would take him up on his challenge. But you know I'm not gonna? I'll tell you what. Because the last time I took him up on the challenge was WrestleMania, and I beat his ass for that stupid piece of tin he's got on his shoulder. And Survivor Series, I'm going to take that stupid piece of tin you got on your shoulders once again. I've beaten you, I've beaten your brother, I've beaten both your brother-in-laws, and I'll beat up your whole family if you get in my face one more time.
Sean's current taunting, coupled with the haunting memory of his antics when he wore the belt, have fueled Bret's fury.
I don't like him, I don't trust him, and I don't believe in anything about the guy. He's a phony little
I've always been selfish. And I always, in my mind, the ultimate goal was for me, all by myself, to be number one.
Remembering the period when Shawn held the title motivates both men for completely different reasons.
I just think that the wrong man won that day. I look very much forward to stepping back in the ring with Shawn Michaels.
Bret has been driven by the rematch since his return to wrestling.
People like me and myself that are tough, the truckers and the lumberjacks and the coal miners that come home from a long day and sit home and find that Saturday and turn on the WWF and they want to see a real man on TV instead of a guy dressed up in little mirrors and glittering chains and earrings and got a little tattoo, a little heart on his arm and stuff. I think that stuff is hard to wash after a while.
And although they seek the same title, Bret and Shawn have a different vision from the top.
The terms of legacy and stuff like that don't mean as much to me as they mean to other people. The legacy that I leave is with me.
I don't obsess like you do. I do this because I like it. You do it because in your mind, Mark Mann, you really think all of this is yours.
Between them, they've held 18 titles. They haven't met in 18 months. And although both men hope to add to their legacy with the matchup at Survivor Series, the true passion and purpose behind this showdown is that it's personal.
Get the doctor. Please get him right now.
Well, apparently, Shawn Michaels is refusing medical attention after the attack on Bret Hart in the locker room.
After this Sunday, it will all be over.
The opinions you love. The history you crave. This is Rant EM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Ladies, gentlemen, and assorted lowlifes, your new recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Blue Collar Scholar, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm always joined by...
the man with the strongest Wi-Fi connection in the world, the Mega Powers.
Oh, so you, I guess you upgraded your connection at home?
Yeah, it actually, the modem completely died like the day after. So hopefully this time around, there won't be any random like things like me calling from a phone booth because my computer broke down or having to drive to a McDonald's and use their Wi-Fi.
We are live on Rant Entertainment Media, rantemradio.com. We are a Shining Wizards Network production. This is episode 96. We are four episodes away from triple digits, and it's the eve of the giving of thanks, David.
And you know what? I'm grateful to be on the Shining Wizards Network with you, Phil.
As am I. I'm very, very, very thankful to be on the Shining Wizards Network. Extremely thankful to be on the Rant. And extremely thankful that I've met so many wonderful people in the last couple of years, especially this year in particular with everybody going to, and all the new shows and all the new friends that we've made and all the special guests that we had. And we have let's get into that in a second. But I'm really thankful that I still have a job. I'm thankful for my friends and family. I'm thankful that I have a roof over my head. And, I'm thankful for Rush. Rush is playing in the background. How about that?
I'm not a big Rush fan.
Well, I'm sticking with the whole Canada theme. I'm not a big, huge Rush fan either. But we are in Montreal tonight for the throwback. So
yes.
You know how
not
we do.
One of my favorite eras of wrestling, but a very significant evening for Survivor Series. And I thought it'd be a good change to do a little something out of the 80s. In early 90s.
Yeah, let's say hello to everybody in the chat room. Harry checking in from the UK. Hello, sir. How are you? Tony C. Black Hammers in the chat room from the Rant. Our boy Pastor Sedell. Pastor, we know what's going on your neck of the woods, so thoughts and prayers. A lot of crap going on the last couple days. I don't want to get too political because Facebook and social media have been a buzz. It has been absolutely awful. But again, thoughts and prayers, and I don't want to get into it without, you know, boring people with politics. That's not what Dave and I do. This is a happy show.
No, this is a wrestling show.
It's a wrestling show. That's how we do. Couple things out of the way. I want to wish the Shining Wizards a very happy 3 years on the air.
They're 3 years old now.
Yep.
Who would have thought?
Dave was
they're out of their terrible twos.
Dave was their first guest. They've had a gazillion people call in, like really, really good talent calling in and friends of the industry and just good stuff all around, man.
If I didn't pass out completely when I got home, I would have called.
Ah, that's okay, dude. I mean, I called in representative for us.
All right. Thank you.
And you know, it's just really good stuff. I'm happy. I'm just in a good mood tonight.
No, I got to say what I'm grateful for.
What are you thankful for, homie?
You know, I'm thankful for having a new job.
This is true.
Thankful for Asian women.
Oh, yeah.
I had a great date on Sunday night.
Had that work out good?
Going with that.
Oh, good, good, good.
Still alive, not in a body bag. Thank you.
All right.
I keep my women alive.
I hope so.
But more importantly, I'm thankful for Black Hammer and the great country that I live in, the United States of America.
Yeah, me too. Shout out to more people in the chat room. Sugar Shane,
I'm thankful for Sugar Shane.
I'm thankful for Matt.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Thank you, Matt.
I'm thankful for Matt too.
I'm thankful for Tank. Everybody, man, all the guys and gals who check in normally with us.
And I'm thankful for my polka dots.
I'm thankful for my polka dots, baby. I almost played that again, but I didn't want to.
Like, I don't know. That entire video montage of wrestlers talking about what they're grateful for at Survivor Series 89 is the best.
I'll be at work tomorrow, so I'm gonna have a decent amount of downtime. So I'll post that as a tribute to everybody on the page. Couple of programming notes. Starting tomorrow at 8 a.m., The Rant is having a weekend-long marathon.
Of the Mega Powers.
Well, partly the Mega Powers and the Impact Player. They're going to play all the shows from WrestleMania 30 weekend. That means our show, we did an afternoon show, we did a pre-show. So our stuff's going to be up on there with all the other shows. So, and then there's going to be a Rant EM Radio host swap where you and I will not be doing Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We're going to be doing The Rant in an upcoming week soon. And I think Surfer is going to be doing Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so look out for that.
You know, if the IWO's in town, I think we're going to have a tank pull in for D-Generation Joe Jackson.
Yeah, happy birthday to Tina Turner, speaking of IWO. 75 years old today.
Still kicking.
What other program?
Well, wait, what was that newspaper headline? Ike Turner beat her to death, literally?
Ike Turner beats Tina to death, yeah. The IWO is happening. The shirts will be made soon. Speaking of shirts, all the shirts on ProWrestlingTees.com starting today, 20% off. That means all of our three. I know Tony Z from the Wizards just bought the NES cartridge parody shirt. Guys, if you ain't got a Turnbuckle Throwback shirt, you should be getting one. And now you have no excuse. They're on sale. Go get them. We're going to be putting more designs up. The Wizards have a new design up. Just go get them, man. Everybody's got shirts up there, so go get them. Little Egypt's got a new shirt up there. Past guest of the show. Go get that shit, man. Go get all those happy, delicious-looking T-shirts.
Yeah, and listen, you know, nothing's worse than a wrestling fan that's not wearing a T-shirt.
Goddamn right. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com is up and running. 95 episodes are up there on the website right now. I just learned how to post them. So go get them, all 95 of them, before I start taking them down in a couple of months. The holiday show is going on. It's going to be December the 19th at 8 p.m. live, special start time. So we will not be broadcasting on the 17th of that week. We'll be doing it on the 19th instead. Tony Z is in studio with us, confirmed. Mega Powers is working on.
I'm going to have some celebrity guests.
And we're going to have
attending the show on Friday the 19th, the most scariest day of the year.
Yeah, and a celebrity guest will be calling in as well. So,
oh, shit.
Yeah, man. So we got guests calling in, guests in the studio.
Celebrities galore.
Yeah, we're going to have a really good end of the year, and then we're going to have two best ofs after that. So we're going to have a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to have the Tony C versus Mega Powers episode up on the best of. Dave Milliken interview. Let's see. Little Egypt interview. Probably Tom Bowman's interview. A bunch of stuff. Just a bunch of interview stuff we'll put up there. Unfortunately, the stuff from Legends got destroyed on accident, so we're not going to play the Dickinson thing.
It got destroyed? What the hell happened?
Yeah, their hard drive crashed. I tried to get the footage from Chris hanging out with us at Legends of the Ring, and, you know, it didn't work out. Tony said their hard drive crashed. So they had to acquire a lot of stuff over again. So.
Oh, my God.
I'll get into my weekend activities in a second. Next week, I will be interviewing because Dave can't do it because he'll be at work. And
because he's too afraid, that's why.
No, he's
that's
not.
That's the real reason. Tell the people the truth.
The man is not a young man, so, I mean, he's...
That's why he's afraid, because I'm young. I got young blood.
Wrestling legend, the exotic one, Mr. Adrian Street, will be calling into the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. I will play...
That big old poof from the UK.
I'll be playing that interview during the live feed next Wednesday night. in between Dave and I doing whatever shtick we have going on next week. Let's see what else I have going on. All right, so let's get into some news and notes. I was at Wrestle Bowl 2014, PWS. Shout out to Tony from Shining Wizards. Tony introduced me to a friend of his. His name was Vinny. And Vinny's doing a really good fundraiser for a guy named CJ who's fighting stage 4 colon cancer. The guy just got married. He's in his third round of chemo. He's a very, very young dude. And he's really in bad shape. So there's a GoFundMe page. I put it on a throwbacks page. And they're selling bracelets and all this other stuff. And I think the you can email Vinny as well. LiveCJStrong@gmail.com. The Facebook page is up. It's Facebook.com/CJStrong. And I think the website is GoFundMe-F8-1. Small V and the number 0. So that is the site, and I'll put it up again. If you could give a couple of bucks, go help him out. Of course, Matt is looking for fundraising too for his medical funds. Do all that. But again, getting back to Wrestle Bowl. I was at Wrestle Bowl with Tony. Shout out to Eddie. Shout out to Dave Destruction from PWS and Thursday Night Destruction on the Shining Wizards Network. Got to see him. Say hello to him for a few minutes. ICP were the guest commissioners. They did a Dan Moff segment. Dan's a firefighter in Jersey.
So really?
Yeah, apparently he saved some dude in a fire, and the dude was there to thank him. That was a nice segment. It's up on YouTube. Let's see. Reality Check and the Swashbuckler had a really good match against Eddie's boys, Heavenly Bodies, with Fala and Brian Myers. Really, really good match. Kevin Matthews stepped his game up that night, man. He was on point.
He was actually good.
He was fantastic, Kevin. Kevin was full energy, and he almost stole the show. Really, it really, really, really was a good match. And then, of course, Mick Foley was the guest. I guess I don't know, like not the I guess the guest referee, and he wound up giving Shining Edward Jackson Mr. Socko. So that was pretty cool. The Reynolds Brothers and the Untouchables had a good match. Amazing Red from Brooklyn won the Suicidal Six-Way title, and I think the match of the night was world champion Mario Bokara. Says to me now, Croatian sensation, mother bitch, defeated Colt Cabana. And can I tell you, Dave, tight. Solid, solid match. Cabana lost some weight doing the DDP yoga. We know Mario's an animal, and Mario's had some crazy, crazy, crazy title defenses the last couple of months since PWS has come back. So really good there. PWS comes back next month, December 20th. Frightmare before Christmas. Tully Blanchard's going to be there. I can't wait. His daughter's hot, by the way.
His daughter is pretty hot.
Yeah, his daughter was with somebody that night at the show I was at.
Oh.
So, yeah, so she's pretty cute. If you're into that kind of thing. All right.
But I'm glad you had a good time at the number 2 promotion that runs out of Rahway Rec Center.
Anyway. Met Pete Sanzone, our buddy. He does a podcast. And Pete's a Ridgewood guy, so I got to hang out with Pete. Fighting Spirit Wrestling from Brooklyn shouted me out. Low Life Louis Ramos was there. A lot of cool people were there. It was nice. Jerry Lynn was there. Mick Foley, like I mentioned, said hello to everybody. Thanked us for the cake. Tony had that picture of all you guys with his cake blown up to an 8x10. He signed it. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
I'm trying to see if I missed anything else. No, I almost bought some New Japan swag. I had no money on me, though, dude.
They were selling New Japan stuff there?
Some guy had a table, and he had an action figure. It was Masahiro Chono, but it was like the size of a G.I. Joe.
Oh.
But it was, like, legit from New Japan, you know, like the packaging and everything.
Yeah, they got some interesting toys over there. I want to get that Inoki homeless figure that I saw a while back.
Yeah, so I almost bought it. It was, like, $15. Then he had a magazine. It was Brody's last New Japan appearance in a magazine before he passed away from 1988. But it was, like, it wasn't the greatest of it was okay, but it wasn't in mint condition. So I thought he overpriced a little bit. But, of course, Rob Feinstein was there. pushing his swag. Other than that, it was a good night. Again, it was a night out. I never really have to call that much because wifey's always doing something. So that was cool. And I'm excited to go back next month because I want to get Tully Blanchard's autograph for the man cave and for the, nice. For the show. All right.
You know, I picked up something over the weekend.
Do tell.
I got the new Macho Man Blu-ray.
I still can't get it. Everybody sold out.
Well, here's a tale for you. Took me probably 2 hours to finally find to get to the place that had it. I went on Best Buy's website. I was going to be in Manhattan. Typed in, who the hell had it, and bought it online. Got into Manhattan. I was like, oh, it's on, 86 and whatever. There should be a train over there.
Right.
Hop stop, totally sold out on me and told me to go to 60 something. So I had to run for 20 blocks so I can get to the Best Buy and get to my destination later on that evening. And you better believe I had the Ultimate Warrior theme song pumping while I was pumping those legs to get to Best Buy. And I was drenched in sweat when I got there. And when I got to the pickup counter, I was like, I'm here to pick up a Blu-ray. And the guy's like, oh, which Blu-ray? And I said, the Macho Man Randy Savage Blu-ray. And he started laughing at me.
Of course you laughed at you. Simpletons, they don't know any better.
Yeah. So I laughed at him, and I picked it up. And then I got back on the train and enjoyed the rest of my evening. And when I got home, you better believe I got my cup of coffee in the big time, cream of the crop, and watched that documentary, which saw a little bit over at your place. That sold me to just find it wherever the hell it was. And it was so fucking good. That whole Blu-ray was devoured within 3 days.
That's awesome.
The match is on there. I think there's only one match that that I've seen on a, previously on a disc, which was the SummerSlam 92 match.
Right.
Everything else was obscure stuff that was either on television, on Coliseum home videos, or house shows. So there's plenty of juicy new stuff that's you could probably only find in shitty quality on YouTube. So I highly recommend the Macho Man Randy Savage Story Blu-ray. And big thumbs up to them for upping their game on the documentary side of things. That was a really good documentary. I can't really say that there was much new information, but the way that they presented it was so fresh. Yeah. That that's probably the crowning achievement of this Blu-ray.
Almost the same similar story. I punched in the numbers to get where I can get it, where I can find it, and they said they had them available in the mall where my wife works at, because she works right below Best Buy. And when she went, I didn't purchase it online. They had it there. So as soon as I found out, I sent her upstairs, and they didn't have it. So in other words, they just didn't update the system. The system didn't update itself.
That's why I like to. The way that they got it set up was that you purchase it, they say hey, we took your information. If it's there, we're going to email you back to confirm that it's there, right. And then you just pick it up. So that's what I did.
I'm probably going to wind up ordering it. The match I'm looking forward to seeing is the match I was actually at, which was January of 87. It was Bruno Sammartino versus Macho Man.
And this was the Lumberjack match.
Yeah, that was the right after he crushed Steamboat's larynx with the bell. So, but it was just cool for me to see Bruno. I didn't get to see him. He was still semi-retired at that point.
Yeah, he only came because of his son David.
Right, and he also came to help Steamboat, which is pretty cool. So
that piece of slime.
A slime, that's right. All right, let's get into some more news here. This is coming out of the Miami Herald on Monday afternoon. New Japan Pro Wrestling, building on a success that it's been picking up with lately, like you and I have been talking about for the last couple of months. They have signed a 13-episode TV deal with Access TV. Access, AXS, Access TV has acquired a 13-episode series from Japan's largest pro wrestling promotion, New Japan. Premiering January 16th, 2015, New Japan will air on Friday nights at 9 p.m., leading into the network's weekly live MMA, Muay Thai, boxing, and kicking broadcasts. Airing for the first time in the U.S., the hour-long series will feature the most exciting matches from New Japan, their broadcast and pay-per-view events. Former UFC champion and New Japan veteran Josh Barnett and famed combat sports commentator Mauro Ranallo will be providing English commentary for the series. How do you feel about that?
That's pretty cool. Well, I'm not a big like MMA guy or anything like that, but I'm curious to see how the presentation will be for it.
But let me ask you something. Why wouldn't TNA jump into a network like this instead of going to the Discovery Channel?
Well, AXS, like, what is their – how are they now? Because I remember they used to be HDNet.
Yeah, they were
so, HDNet. You know, what is their range now? Because I remember when ROH was on HDNet, like, hardly anybody had it.
Well, maybe that's why, but that's probably the only reason why, because this would make perfect sense if you're going to put wrestling and kickboxing and Muay Thai and MMA – Impact would have fit right in with this. Then I thought about the whole Jarrett and Global Force thing. Maybe Dixie didn't want to do it because maybe she knew this was going on down the down low. I don't know.
Well, we'll see how it goes. It's 13 episodes, which isn't too much, but I guess it's just their way of
it's 3 months though, it's
dipping their toes in the water, see how it goes.
3 months, not bad. And I think Don West might be doing a commentary with Jim Ross at the pay per view.
Don West?
Be Daily, people. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know if it's true.
Oh,
or not.
My God. If that's going to be the greatest birthday gift ever, if that's the case.
And Veda Scott will be doing the backstage interviewing. And she's not
so
bad.
She's going to be there live.
She's live. And she's not bad on the eyes either, Veda Scott. So
she's raw. Yeah, she's still uncooked and uncensored.
Did you see Survivor Series on Sunday?
You know, I got home late. And I basically just kind of fast-forwarded to see if Sting was there, and he was. And it was awesome. It was, like, you know, I don't care how many people, you know, posted saying, like, oh, Sting's going to be there. You know,
Sting.
Sorry.
It was done so well. Like, I think it was like from what I saw, because I was just kind of jumping around just to see if anything seemed worth watching for later on. I skipped through everything. I didn't watch anything.
All right. Well,
I just skipped through stuff. But once the main event came around, I'm like, if he's not, he's got to be in the main event. So I kind of wasn't skipping around as much during then. And I was watching it, and I was like, this looks like a really good match. And I let it roll, and lo and behold, the icon, the franchise,
Sting,
was there.
Sting.
And I don't care what the dude looks like, it was awesome. And the fact that Ziggles got over at the end, he was the sole survivor. Just blew my mind. It was such a great ending to what looked like a so-so pay-per-view.
Fandango opened the card. He's back with some tango salsa.
Nobody cares.
Right. He beat Justin Gabriel, but dude, his new finisher is an off-the-top rope leg drop. Can I tell you, this dude has some height on this leg drop.
I saw that.
He did it again. You saw it? He did it again on Raw the next night. Dude, I had to rewind it. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, the dude, I mean, he caught flight. That's a sick-ass leg drop he's got from the top rope. I was really digging that. Miz and Mizdow won the tag titles. Traditional Survivor Series match with the Divas, nobody cares. Bray Wyatt defeats Dean Ambrose by DQ. I hate that they call Bray Wyatt the Eater of Worlds. As a comic book fan, I'm appalled because that's Galactus, and
you know they're running out of nicknames for people.
Yeah, the Adam Rose and the Bunny beat Slater Gate, and nobody cares. Nikki Bella beats AJ Lee for the Divas title in like 30 seconds, and Brie distracts AJ with a big, fat, wet kiss, which stole the show, apparently.
It was more over than Sting.
No, it was not more over than
Sting.
No, it was not. Of course, and then your main event was your traditional Survivor Series elimination match. Team Authority lost. The Authority is out of power. If Team Cena loses, all the members of Team Cena, excluding John Cena, will be fired. Team Cena obviously won. Big Show turned again, which was stupid. I mean, Rusev looked good for a while. I know everybody's talking about Ziggles, but Seth Rollins was really, really good in this match.
The guy's always good.
I mean, but he was really good that night. I mean, I know Ziggler stole the show. He was amazing.
He's always stealing the show.
But if you want to give, like, a runner-up, it was definitely Seth Rollins, man. You know, and then Ziggler obviously wins the whole thing. Rolls up Luke Harper for the win. I'm sorry, rolls up Luke Harper and then winds up beating Seth Rollins in the finals. But they went back and forth. It was a sick, sick final match there. And then, of course, Triple H pulls the referee out. They pull the referee. Triple H hits him. And then Triple H hits Ziggles with the pedigree and puts a fallen Rollins on top of on Ziggles. Triple H calls for another ref. And Scott Armstrong comes down. Everybody starts booing Scott Armstrong. And then Scott counts one. Two, and then you hear, like, the crow music, like the lightning, and then the music plays, and all of a sudden,
Sting
appears, and then everybody just mocks out, and everybody goes crazy. Crowd starts chanting, holy shit, holy shit. Sting gets in the ring, stares down Trips, and then the do-do-do-dum, start chanting.
Because it was awesome, they're right.
They have a couple of words exchanged, and then Trips takes a swing, and of course,
Sting
gets the Scorpion Death Drop on Trips, and then Sting puts Ziggles on top of Rollins. Sting leaves, heads to the back, and the rest is history.
Now I got a question for you, big man.
What's up, baby?
You've been talking trash about Sting for a long time coming back.
I have been.
So what did you think?
I told you, I love Sting. I loved everything about him up until the Crow shit in the 90s. I loved Sting. He was one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I didn't want to see him wrestle in the ring. I still don't want to see him. I told you and I told everybody else on the show that I thought him being there would be awesome if he told a good story. This will probably tell a good story. My problem now is I'm hearing they gave him a Brock Lesnar-ish contract.
Really?
Exactly. Why would you do that? Like, this is like the lamest the title has been. The champion has not been on fucking TV since August.
Wait a second. Everybody complained when the champion would be on, like, all the time, defending the belt all the time. Now people are complaining that the belt and the guy isn't around enough.
Dude, not a segment, not a promo, not nothing. Dude, at least the other guys came on TV once in a while. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, it's not telling me a good story. If this is probably going to lead up to Triple H and Sting in the ring. I don't see Undertaker coming back in this juncture. And if you're going to fit him in, you got to start fitting him in right after the Rumble, which doesn't make any sense because he hasn't been anywhere in a year.
Yeah, they got to, well, Undertaker, they got to act on him quick.
Right, so
especially
now
with Sting.
Yeah, so now the thing is, they give Sting the power. I'm sorry, they give Cena the power of rehiring the Authority, which opens up Cena for a heel turn, if you think about that for a second. Then, if you're not going to have Sting back, then why would you bring him out and get him involved in a major storyline? He's going to drop Triple H and not come back until March? April?
Mm.
Like, what's going to happen? I mean, how did they come back into power? That's first of all. Second of all, where does John Cena fit in with all this? So for the first time in a long time, it actually gets you wondering, which is okay. You know? Shane's like, I'm sorry, Harry says he thinks it's a good thing about Sting, keeps the mystique around him, take the shine off. He was on the, I don't want if he was on every Raw. I don't want him on every Raw. But if you're going to make him show up once every 3 months, then don't put him in a storyline like that. And the mystique is the story. What story is there? That
he's got to be the elusive Sting.
Has to be, because now Cena has the authority to bring to hire these people back. I'm not saying Cena's going to go heel, Matt. I'm just saying that opens up Cena to go heel, because now
it's a potential, which may or may not happen.
Yeah, of course. It makes you wonder, you know?
Anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, what the world is watching. No, not anymore, really, but that's besides the point.
What half of a million people are watching now.
Sting did the same thing in WCW, Sugar Shane says. He did, but they kept him in the story.
Like he wasn't a champion.
He wasn't a champion. He was in the rafters. They kept asking for him. And when they had the NWO up to 1,700 members, that's when he comes back and wins the title. And, I mean, that was a great moment. When Sting finally came down from the rafters and beat Hogan, and the entire ring was like, you know, I mean, they put him on his shoulders. And it was a great time. It was awesome. That was a good story, though. Even though the NWO had
also it was like a Sabu Taz kind of deal. You know, the guy hadn't performed in such a long time. Yeah, like they built up the story for a year,
right? And they had legit heat. Like Taz was legitimately pissed that Sabu took those bookings in Japan.
Yeah,
like there was legit heat there. So you know what? And it all goes back to the story. So if you can keep Sting off TV and tell me a good story, I guess I won't have a problem with it. But I think it was great. I'm sorry, I marked out. It's Sting, dude. Come on, it's Sting. He's one of the best.
And I'd like to add, like, as long as they don't do, you know, like bringing him against a random opponent, like with like Jericho. When Jericho came back, they threw him to Randy Orton. There was no reason for that.
I don't want him to fight at all, Dave. Sting doesn't have to fight.
Sting needs to fight.
No, he doesn't. He earned that right, dude. He is a legend.
He's the franchise. He's
right,
the icon.
He is the franchise.
He needs to fight. At least a few more matches, and then that's it.
But I just think that Tony C says he didn't beat Hollywood.
Well, hopefully he doesn't get one of those fast counts on Triple H.
He doesn't have to fight, though, dude. He does not have to fight. He's earned that stat. You see the way the crowd went off of him?
Listen, like, we got several hundred people in the chat room right now. If you want to see Sting fight, type fight, and we'll see what the fans want.
Most wrestling fans are greedy anyway. They want to see the old con just get in there and fucking mix it up, so. And all fans included.
The old codgers.
Yeah. Right. The old codgers. They want these guys to get in the ring and tussle, and they don't care that they're going to, you know. I don't think he can go more than 10 minutes.
Yo, granted, what he did at Survivor Series was just like a few moves. The dude was quick as hell in the ring. He still looks great in there.
Did you see his last EMA Do you see his last TNA stuff?
No, I don't want to see his last TNA stuff.
Harry says Sting versus Phil. Yeah, see, dude, I'm not in shape. You gotta, give me 30 pounds. Give me 30 pounds to lose till Mania, and I'll give him 3 minutes, and I'll let him drop me on his head. I will do the job to Sting.
Tons of people saying fight. They know.
Okay, right. We're going to agree to disagree. I don't think he has to fight. I think he's earned that right to be in the ring. And see Tank agrees, no fight, earn his spot.
So, wait, now Sting has a great match at whatever event that he's wrestling at. Are you going to eat your hat live on the air?
I have over...
And you enjoy it.
I have over 75 hats right now.
So can eat one of them on the air.
I'll eat some crow. Get it? Crow? Because he was the crow gimmick. I'll eat some crow.
All right, you'll eat a Sting action figure if you enjoy the match.
Right. I'm not eating action figures. I'm not eating toxic plastic. I will eat some...
Totally edible, Phil. What are you talking about?
I will eat some crow.
Kids eat them all the time.
With a side of humble pie. Listen, the 12-year-old kid, the 12-year-old Phil wants to see Sting, you know, do the Scorpion Deathlock and scream, and, you know, the 20-year-old Sting Phil fan of Phil, I'm sorry, the 20-year-old fan of Sting wants to see Sting use a baseball bat on everybody in the ring, but the 40-year-old Phil does not want to see the 56-year-old Sting wrestle. So the bottom line is, the part of me would love to see him fight, but I don't think he needs to.
He needs to fight, and he needs to bring one of those bats that, like, bend when he hits people with them.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Like he had on WCW.
Oh, Jesus. No, Harry says he needs to go down to NXT and learn the WWE style. Pastor Sadell says it really depends on who he's working with. Here's the deal, though, Pastor. It's like, for me, you think Triple H is going to fight at WrestleMania for more than – he's gonna? You think Sting can give you guys – 20 minutes or 15 minutes in the ring?
Absolutely. He's Sting.
You think so? No.
It's happening, Phil. Tank. They're already setting the stage for him against Triple H. It's going to happen.
Tank said I should eat one of Dave's posters that he ain't selling.
You know what? They actually might be up online this weekend because I'm taking a little vacation, so I'm going to have some time to do that kind of stuff now.
Jesus. All right.
So save up your pennies, kids.
Save up your pennies. I don't have any other news. Nothing was newsworthy. Do you have anything you want to add before we get into Facebook questions and take a break?
I was hardly on the internet like this week, so.
I know you were wrapped up in some sushi there.
Yeah. All right, she was Korean, so.
Oh, okay. So a little kimchi?
Yes.
All right, then.
Not the guy that came down the aisle with Kamala.
Not the guy that came down with Kamala, right.
Though I'm sure he was around somewhere.
I'm pretty. Where you were, I'm not surprised. All right, Axel Foley wants to know, doing a complete 180, what if it was Shawn Michaels who left for WCW? Would WCW had dropped the ball on him like it did with Brett?
Not answering any of these what if questions.
What do you think the creative direction that Shawn would have gone? Now, he came in right at the height of the Attitude Era, so, and they dropped the ball with Brett because Brett didn't want to work with certain people. Bret Hart was not a nice person. He was not a lot of times a team player, from what I'm reading. And I did.
Oh, we do have another news thing, but continue. I'm going to bring it up after you're done.
All right, I'm going to answer Axel Foley's question. So would they probably would have done the same thing with Shawn, or kept him as a heel and made him NWO. I mean, unless he was he would have been like one of the saviors of the the brigade against the NWO in terms like a face turn. So what was your news item there?
Yoshitatsu's neck is fractured and he may not wrestle for another year.
Number 3 on the freaking hit list of AJ Styles. And
and I saw the photos. Like, I don't understand why fans who – I don't even know if any of these fans saw the match are complaining that, like, he's got to do the move a different way. Like, dude, he's just like landing. He's just jumping in the air and landing, you know, stomach first for the guy onto the mat. Like, I saw photos. The fucking dude tucked his head when the move was being applied. So he's like putting his neck right out there to get fucking broken. So dudes got to stop tucking their necks when they're taking this move.
I mean, it's just 3 people, and I actually
number 6.
He hurt 6 people, but he really injured 3 people.
Yeah,
that's from one. Okay,
and so there's 6 dumbasses that tucked their head when they were taking this move.
And the first guy he really hurt posted something on Twitter. It was like, listen, man, I'm not saying, you know, he said almost the same thing you said, but then he asked him to stop doing the match. You know,
he asked him what?
He asked him to stop doing the move in his matches.
So wait, the guy admitted that he didn't tuck his head. The guy admitted that he tucked his head, and he fucked it. He fucked himself up. And then he asked him to do the move. That's stupid.
Well, I don't know, dude. Again,
it's not like that crazy of a move. There are guys that are like brain dead now. Like when they get this move, that they feel that they have to tuck their head.
Yeah, so it was 6 people he injured, but 3 got really hurt, Yoshitatsu being number 3. So unless I'm wrong, correct me, I can give 2 fucks actually at this point. But I read it like that, so that's how I read it. And we'll find out again if he uses it in December because he's fighting Rob Van Dam at the PWS show.
All right. We'll see if he breaks his neck there.
I hope not.
Because I saw him wrestle, what's his face, Matt Sydal, yeah. You know, a few weeks ago at the number one sports entertainment federation, Jersey All-Pro, that wrestles at the Rahway Rec Center. They had a great match. The Styles Clash was hit. And it was done, and the dude didn't tuck his neck. So Matt Sydal can still claim that his neck is not broken. He's good.
You know what I'm looking forward to also next month? Pat Buck is fighting Jeff Jarrett.
That's oh, my God. Slap Nuts?
Slap Nuts.
Slappy is going to be there?
Yep. Slap Nuts is going to fight Pat Buck. That should be interesting. All right. Let's get back to the questions. I give a fuck about AJ Styles and his stupid move. You know he's a really good wrestler. He's just a tool bag. Let's see. Sugar Shane, holidays definitely are here. What is one Santa moment you'll never forget in wrestling?
When Santa Claus debuted.
Okay.
Is that a Santa moment?
That is a Santa moment. My Santa moment was when the BWO hooked up with Santa Claus and Stevie Richards super kicked Santa in the face.
You know what? I'm going to have to switch to that one because that was cool. And I remember them saying that was not like pre-planned, that they actually super kicked the Santa Claus in the face.
Right. Choppy wants to know, if Brett had never suffered a stroke in 2002, do you think he would be wrestling today?
I'm not answering any what-if questions anymore. Well, first of all, the dude did wrestle again, so.
Right. I'm going to say probably. Let's see. Eric wants to know, Bret Hart was starting to pick up some steam by the end of 99. By winning the big world title tournament and main eventing Starrcade, do you think he would have had a good year in 2000 to solidify his WCW run if he wasn't forced to retire? Of course. Of course. Let's see. Baza wants to know, who was your favorite wrestler of the year? As it stands now, I would lean towards Kyle O'Reilly. After winning last year's Bola, he has built on this year having a great, good run as PWG champ and securing the tag team success with Bobby Fish, one half of Red Dragon, both in ROH and New Japan. Who is your wrestler of the year? I'm going to say Tanahashi only because he won the belt back in New Japan and there's no Daniel Bryan and there's no, you know, there's no CM Punk. And on top of that, you give Adam Cole a nod, too. You give Michael Elgin a nod. And you can give Kyle O'Reilly a nod.
You know who I'm going to give my nod to?
Who's that?
AJ Styles.
AJ Styles. Okay.
He won the IWGP strap. And despite winning it, a lot of Japanese fans were not into him when he was when he won the title. So he got to prove himself over the span of the G1 Climax tournament, which was one of the best tournaments of all time, in my opinion. I watched all of it except for the finals. I don't know if somebody's selling a downloadable copy. I need to check that out, but I've seen all of them except for that, and it was a really fucking good tournament.
A download of what?
The finals of the G1 Climax. Not talking about Daily Motion.
I think I had the finals. I didn't see them yet, though. I'll check. I'll double check the download list.
Because I want to watch it on my TV. I don't want
to
watch it on.
No, I'll give it to you if I have it. No big deal. If not, I could definitely get it. It's not a big deal.
Very good.
And one more question. Oh no, I'm sorry. There's a few more. I'm sorry. Tony C wants to know: did Earl do the right thing by calling for the bell at the screw job? Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know what? I agree. He did do the right thing, but you know when he did the wrong thing, Phil?
When he ran out of the ring after the bell. After the bell rang?
No, that was smart, too.
Because he knew he fucked up. We'll get into that later on.
No. He did the wrong thing when he started selling those bootleg WWE referee shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? That's when he lost his sweet gig in the WWE. That's when he did the wrong thing, Tony C.
Yeah, well, Tony C didn't want to know about the screw job. He didn't want to know when he did the wrong thing. And that was a good...
I wanted to throw that out there because...
No, that's a really good... Really good devil's advocate. That's really good. All right. This is a really good question. Was the screw job the greatest work of all time?
Was it a work?
Well, that's the thing. Nobody really knows.
If it was a work, then yes.
Yes, I don't think
because obviously at this point we're still questioning whether it was real or not.
I have we're gonna play good cop bad cop tonight because I have a bunch of reasons why Bret Hart was totally wrong in every scenario. You could debate me on all. I have 8 different points, and we'll talk about that later. But if it was a work, then yes. But I
you know he was wrong for questioning Shawn Michaels' lifestyle.
Yeah, and I played that in the beginning of the podcast. I had found the footage of the Raw leading up to – there was a 6-minute piece on the Raw, which is the November 3rd edition in 1997, leading up to the pay-per-view. And
I thought it was hilarious that, like, for that build-up, like, there's that part where Shawn Michaels is saying, like, you know, I'm proud of my lifestyle. And it totally sounds like he's, like, coming out of the closet.
Right. All right, so – let's see. One more question. Choppy wants to know. One more question, guys. I've always been a huge fan of Shane Douglas. In your opinion, do you think he would have been a big star in WWE if he had gone back? I know he had a lot of heat towards Shawn and Vince, but if he swallowed his pride, went back after WCW folded.
I'm not answering any what if questions, but I will say this: I want the fans to answer my what if.
Okay.
Of the contest that we got running.
We only have one contestant, which is...
One contestant?
One contestant sent me an email. That's it. So you can plug the contest at the end of the show, and hopefully we'll get more people to do it.
We need some more people on this contest, because I got the prize, and it's fucking sweet as hell.
I'm sure you always come correct with your prizes.
Yeah.
You know what, Choppy? I, too, am a huge fan. If you listen to the show, I am a huge fan of the franchise. I love Shane Douglas. Loved the triple threat. All different versions of it I loved. I don't know if he would have swallowed his pride, and I really don't know if... See, the climate changed when they switched over and they bought WCW over and they absorbed all the WCW guys, but Shane Douglas was not really a factor in ECW anymore at that point. Rhino was a champion, and they had Steve Corino, and so, you know... Maybe if Shane Douglas was the focal point of ECW, then possibly. But at that point, he was at the tail end and wasn't doing very much with them. So I'm going to say no. All right? All right. Let's do a quick break. And we come back. We have an awesome throwback tonight. This is a... wait a second, Dave. Hold on 1 second. Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Hello?
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's going on there, Maniac Matt, the man on the street?
Hey, this is an I couldn't pass up this opportunity. This is an on-the-fly road report. I am packed out here. We are at J.J. Dillon's house. We're having an early Thanksgiving dinner. We've packed out his double wide. We're doing a Thursday night Nitro party over here, and it is just bananas.
Wow. Who's at
the party? Whoa. Who's at J.J. Dillon?
Who's at the party, man?
Oh, well, we've got... Well, let's see what we got for the spread here. We've got some sexual chocolate pudding brought in by Mark Henry. We got some... what is this over here? Oh, the Rock brought some Kuntang pie. So that's good. And Law Resistance just brought in some hot French... hot fresh French roll. So those look delicious.
What? Right.
Who brought potato salad to Thanksgiving dinner? Who brought this?
That's got to be Jimmy Hart, dude.
Who brought this? Oh, is that who brought it? No. Okay. The Zodiac brought freaking potato salad to Thanksgiving. What an idiot.
Potato salad.
That's what I don't know. I don't know about this guy. And to top it off, Ray Trailer, Boss Man, he is preparing a special dish called, what is this? Little Pepper Surprise. So,
oh my God.
So that's getting ready to come out of the oven now. So we're all getting ready to sit down, have some Pepper Surprise, and have a nice Thanksgiving. So we just want to tell you guys, happy Thanksgiving from us. Oh, last minute. Oh, we got, what is this? Who brought this in? Oh, Dave Mega Power Stuffing. What is this made of? Oh, it's White Weasel Stuffing. All right. So we got the Dave Mega Powers White Weasel Stuffing. So we just want to tell you guys happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for everything that you guys are doing.
Happy Thanksgiving, bro. Thank you so
much.
This man
has no shame.
Thank you so much.
No shame in this. Oh, wait. Oh, who in the hell invited Virgil? All right, I got to get – he's sitting in the yard waiting for some turkey. All right, I got to get him off the yard.
Does he have his merchandise stand with him?
Oh, it's sad. Can you get him a can of cranberry sauce, Jimmy? All right, I got to get out of here. All right, we'll talk to you guys later.
Enjoy your bird, man. Have a good day, man. Thank you so much.
Take care, Maniac Matt.
Thank you.
That dude's awesome.
You know, I would think that Jimmy Hart would have the three bean casserole.
I thought he just opted out and bought the friggin' potato salad. I took a lucky guess, though. Of course, the Zodiac would bring potato salad because he has an identity crisis. So of course he'd probably have the same kind of crisis in the supermarket, not knowing what to buy.
Well, at least he didn't bring a big old bag of cocaine to the party.
Did Ron Simmons bust any kids in for that dinner? Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Thanksgiving Eve, episode 96 is in effect. Let's do some quick plugs and we'll be right back with our throwback. Your new home for the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com. That's right, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com for links to all our shows, our friends, and our merchandise. Don't forget, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com is a part of the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio. So what are you waiting for? Go to TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com now. So we here at the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast want to know, have you been a good little boy or have you been a good little girl this year? If so, we want to give you a nice present to end our year right, especially from us. Nah, screw that. Join us live December the 19th, 2014, Friday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks 2014 Holiday Spooktacular. We had so much fun last year, we're doing it again. We'll have special guests in studio, recap an awesome year, take your phone calls, and do an awesome throwback for you. It's Starrcade 1985, The Gathering, which is where the promo of promos was born. So join us live on The Rant. It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. It's The Rant. It's the Shining Wizards Network. It's entertainment here.
GeeksOfTheIndustry.com. With such fantastic programming as Chattastrophe, Pro Wrestling Nation, Two for Flinching, Sleeve Notes, Wrestling with Smut, Cart Glitch International, The Mega Powers Radio Podcast, and the flagship Geeks of the Industry. Go to GeeksOfTheIndustry.com now.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. Forget about that. You just brought up
Gary Hart will whip his ass.
Tony C just brought up Ike Turner. How awesome was Lawrence Fishburne in that movie?
Oh, excellent.
I'm sorry to get off topic, but he was amazing. As
played that role. Nah. I got San Antonio. Nah. I can have you. Nah.
Ike said he only hit her once.
He beat her with a shoe!
He
said he only smacked her once.
He smacked her once, but he hit her with everything else.
I hit her with everything, but the kitchen sink now, dog, but I'm saying.
Did you see that? You see that look in his eye?
Natty is more of a man than rage.
Ooh, wait a minute now.
Oh, yes, Works.
Wait a second. This is the co-host of the Wrestling Colin Show. You
yes, Works. That was all right. So disrespectful.
Alright.
Nah, I can't have you.
That's
you
why your girl's about, like, you that's why your girl's about to get eliminated from the Amazing Race.
You see that? I've never questioned your manhood, Rage.
Bullshit, you didn't, surfer.
Tony.
You never ever question your manhood.
You did it. Yo, you always do it.
How?
The preceding announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. the Wrestling Call-In Show, every Saturday evening on RantEMRadio.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Karate Fighters in War! What do you think, Jumbo Jim?
Man, this is gonna be a slobber knocker!
Well, let's get right to the action!
Good luck, Sonny, and may the best man win!
I am!
It's the King versus Sonny! Sonny versus the King!
The King is the Karate Fighters champion!
Let's go to the instant replay! Oh, my! What's this? That's gum! Straight from Lawler's mouth!
He's trying to seduce Razor Jaw with another woman!
Bribery! The King's a cheat! That's my store, and I'm standing by!
Man, Jumbo Jim, as a result of these scandalous accusations, the tribunal has stripped Jerry Lawler of his title and crowned Sonny, 1997, Milton Bradley, Karate Fighters Champion.
I didn't know who are you anyway?
That concludes the 1997 Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Holiday Tournament Championship.
Retailers.
Folks, let's take it back.
Times have changed. Our kids are getting worse. They won't obey their parents. They just want to fight and curse.
Should we blame the government or blame society?
Or should we blame the images on TV?
No, blame Canada.
Blame Canada.
With all their beady little eyes and clapping heads so full of lies.
Blame Canada. Blame Canada.
We need to form a full assault.
It's head is false.
Don't blame me for my son Stan. He saw the darn cartoon and now he's off to join the clan. My boy Eric once had my picture on his shelf, but now when I see him, it tells me to fuck myself.
Well, blame Canada!
Blame Canada!
It seems that everything's gone wrong since Canada came along.
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
They're not even a real country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches?
Should we blame the fire?
Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no!
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
With all the hockey hullabaloo
and that bitch on Murray, too.
Blame Canada! Shame on Canada!
Yeah, blame Canada. That's right. All right, we're back.
We're back.
That's right. We're live. RantEntertainmentMedia.com. RantEMRadio is the place. All right.
We're the big boys broadcast.
That's right. We're the big boys broadcast. We need shirts like that. We're the big boys broadcast.
We need with like the same lettering and stuff like that.
Yeah, we need like a. We gotta get Matt.
We need to get our boy Matt to do like a Turnbuckle Throwbacks logo in the WCW font, if possible.
Yeah.
With where the big boys broadcast on the back, with maybe like a Rant logo or something.
Yeah. I had the list of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame inductees this year. They go by era, by different eras. And I know the Freebirds got in.
Oh, so they got into a Hall of Fame.
Yes. I don't know. I forgot the rest of the list because there was a lot of old-timers. Like I said, they went by era. So, but congratulations to them. Well, whoever's left. It's just Michael Hayes. But congratulations to the Freebirds, who deserve to be in some sort of Hall of Fame, like Dave said. And that's pretty much it. All right, so here we are, Thanksgiving Eve, I should say, 2014. But this didn't take place on Thanksgiving anymore. They stopped doing the Survivor Series tradition stuff way before this. So this is November the 9th, my dad's birthday, 1997. 20,593 fans packed the Molson Center. Now it's called the Bell Center. In downtown Montreal, Quebec, Canada, Milton Bradley's Karate Fighters proudly presents the 11th Annual Survivor Series. Tagline was on the poster was called Gang Rules with a Z, referring to the wrestling stables that feuded with each other in the event, right?
Which Z is the proper spelling of rules.
Oh, yeah, of course. In Canada, I guess. Obviously, like we mentioned, the main event was HBK versus Bret Hart for the title. This would be the last of three championship matches they had. Previously headlined by the 92 Survivor Series and WrestleMania 12 together. Michaels won a title in a controversial fashion, of course, when Vince McMahon ordered the match. Referee Earl happened to end the match as Michael held in Hart's own finishing maneuver, the sharpshooter. Now the incident known as the Montreal Screwjob and marked Hart's last appearance in on the WWE and on television for them until 2005.
I think Shawn Michaels should be called the real conqueror of worlds. You know, he's screwed over the British Bulldog in his own country, and he screwed over Bret Hart in his own country, getting those fans wild. And you know what? I'm a huge Shawn Michaels fan for situations and matches like these tonight that we're talking about.
I was not a big Michaels fan.
And you know what? I support Shawn Michaels' lifestyle, too.
All right. That's fine.
I know people like you, Phil, got a problem with it.
No. I don't have a problem with it. I just wasn't a big fan of his. He's a great wrestler. Don't get me wrong. One of the best wrestlers ever.
You know, we're not in the UK, Phil. It's okay to be like Shawn Michaels.
Ah, boy. Anyway. So good. I'm not even going to be partial because I thought after watching this over again and, you know, getting my points across and getting my research and I watched a bunch of documentaries and shit, I think that, you know, Bret was in a really good position. I think that economically they changed, the company. And you were about to go public. The Attitude Era was kicking in. I don't think Bret was happy with anything that went down there. And I thought Vince covered his own ass. And that's pretty much it. And I'll get into that. I'll get into more of that when we do the main event.
So much for the new generation.
Well, listen, you know what? I told you I had a problem with guys running their mouth about the contract when they're still under contract. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, apparently it was going on for a while. And he had already spoke to WCW, which I thought was, you know, whatever. But we'll get into that at the end of the podcast. All right. So let's get the opening match. The New Age Outlaws, fairly new as a team at this point.
Yeah, they didn't have any theme music.
Yeah, not yet.
You know, it was interesting. They didn't have any theme music, but they were not wearing the event shirt to the ring, which was a good sign.
Yes,
they were going to head onward and upward in the World Wrestling Federation.
I'll still say to this day that was one of the best things they ever did. Both guys were going nowhere with singles in their singles runs.
Oh yeah, what was
Billy Gunn was doing that rockabilly shit.
He was rockabilly before this.
And then Jesse James was the roadie. Right.
So things were not going anywhere.
No, not at all. You know. Teaming up with the Godwins,
Hog and Pig.
Southern Justice.
I actually like this version of them when they had like the creepy hillbilly Deliverance music playing.
Yeah, I agree.
And Pig, Phineas Godwin, had like those like really gnarly, Raleigh Fingers barbershop guys tattooed on his arm. It looked terrifying.
And they defeated the Headbangers, who were a very popular team at the time. And
I couldn't stand these guys.
Yeah, me either. I didn't like them, especially being a New York hardcore kid. They just
I hated the fact that they were like wearing circle jerks and misfit shirts to the ring, looking the way that they looked.
With no clue. The Headbangers and the New Blackjacks, which was Bradshaw and Barry Windham. What a shit gimmick that was. Here's a gimmick that could have went over 5 years prior.
Could have gone over maybe 10 years
maybe
prior.
Maybe 10 years prior. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Maybe if this was like 84 or 85, it would have been fine, but not in 1997.
I totally agree, Mega Powers.
Well, they had the new what? They had the new Blackjacks, they had the new Rockers, and they had the new Midnight Express.
And
the new Midnight Express, I know
Eric put the picture up today.
Our listener, Eric, posted a photo since he's the voice of us.
He's Eric from Minnesota is the voice of the throwbacks.
Yeah, he's the new voice of the throwbacks. He's got our opinions better than we do because he said these guys are our favorite tag team.
Oh.
And he's right because they were NWA champion, tag team champions. I got to throw this out there. I thought it was hilarious that during the Monday Night Wars, WWF actually brought in the NWA to help matters, which is even funnier because even with the NWA on WWE television, that did not help out that fucking organization at all. And you know what? Bombastic Bart and Bodacious Billy or whatever their fuck names are. I have no idea what the hell was going on when that was happening. Even when I was a kid, I was confused by that because I knew that there was another Midnight Express. I had seen their matches and I didn't understand why Bart and Bob Holly, you know, were Bodacious and Bombastic. It didn't correlate with what the previous Midnight Express was all about. So I don't know what the hell was going on with all that, but
I have no idea.
It is what it is, and Jeff Jarrett with his NWA Heritage Championship trying to defend it on Raw as if anybody gave a shit.
No one did. Zero fucks were given at that point.
No, that was just like a strange thing, like when the NWA just like popped up in WWF at the time. You know, I know it was like a Jim Cornette thing, but it just seemed like, you know, when you watch Raw back then and the NWA portion would come on, it just seemed like they just gave them television time. That was it. And then when it was on, you know, it didn't I'm sure it affected some storylines. I can't remember offhand, but it just seemed like NWA was just on. And then once it was over and people just didn't give a shit during that period when they were on the television.
So this was like a 15-minute match. It wasn't terrible because I mean, all the guys.
It seemed sloppy as shit.
No, you know what? I disagree. I thought as much.
Actually,
as
the next match. No.
The next match was one of the worst. But I thought that even though the gimmicks were kind of shitty for the headbangers and the blackjacks, I thought the match was solid. All around, I didn't think
it was interesting to watch.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean,
I wish it was like they have all these teams fighting each other. Well, I guess it made more sense for them to do it, you know, the way that they did it. Because I was about to say they should have done the 10-team Survivor Series match. That would have been a good addition. But now that I think about it, you know, especially with the next match being just literally two gangs going against each other, that made more sense for them to do it that way. But I don't know. Just seeing with the tag teams going against each other, they did have more tag teams. I wish they would have actually done a 10-team elimination match.
Yeah, you know what? They could have, although it would kind of like defeat the purpose of the whole gang rules, theme of the pay per view.
Yeah,
almost everybody in these matches are teams, and they had beef with each other, so it was like a thing.
Yeah, and they had to settle it their own way.
Right. Your next match was the Truth Commission taking on
Yo, this was the Sidewalk Slam match of the night.
Yeah, it was.
Because that was the only move that was performed in this entire match.
Yeah, I your boy Kurgan was in here. Again.
My boy Kurgan. I see him walking down the street and I avoid him and now he's my boy.
Oh, he's your boy. I mean, you saw him. yeah, they beat the DOA, the biker gang, which is Ron and Don Harris. Crush,
I was not a fan of these guys
Crush
ever.
And Brian Lee, yeah, it was awful.
Brian Lee and Crush, they're great, but what was it? Chains and Skull or Eight Ball? Skull,
Chains and Eight Ball. Yeah,
Chains was Brian Lee, right?
I think so. Yeah,
yeah, man. Like Skull and Eight Ball, like other than they were like twins, not the Bella twins, but Tony C called me Dynamic Dave.
Yeah, I guess I'll be Fabulous Phil, Dynamic Dave, the new Midnight Express.
Tubular Tony.
Tubular Tony. Tony Cornette, Tony C.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, this match was just the sidewalk slam match of the night. Skull and 8-Ball. Don't know why these guys were hanging around. They went to TNA with Slappy later on down the road.
Hold on a second. We'll bring it back to music, too. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry. All right.
Music to comb your mullet to.
This is true. Yeah, it was. It was funny. It was they brought the bikes out, right? And then they had to go park them. Like they do like a little.
Yeah, they brought them around the ring, and then they brought them back.
And then they had to bring them back.
And then they walked down the aisle again.
That was pretty funny shit.
Well, at least they're polite and they're not leaving their bikes all over the ring, you know.
That's true. Your next match was Team Canada, the Bulldog, Neidhart, Jim Neidhart. Doug Furness and Phil LaFond. Doug Furness is now the Canadian sympathizer, as he's the only.
I'm guessing. Well, this is Team Canada with no members from Canada in it.
Neidhart was a Canadian.
I think he was initially from. I know they were billing him from Las Vegas, Nevada.
From Reno, Nevada, but I think he was Canadian. I think he is actually Canadian.
He was citizen. Canadian.
Well, yeah, he's now a criminal, but.
Jim Neidhart's a criminal.
Yeah.
What did he do?
You didn't know he did, like, last year? He did a whole bunch of robberies?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, look it up.
Who did he rob?
I don't know, something involved with drugs and, what do you call it? Look it up, because it happened when Natty first got into Total Divas. He had, like, a mugshot or something like that.
Oh, boy. So that's why he was never on NXT.
Yeah.
The only guy that's actually from Canada is Phil LaFond.
Right.
So Team Canada with only one Canadian.
Right. Against Team USA, which was if you listen to the promo that they did backstage, Vader couldn't even talk, and he had to try to justify why they were all teaming up. But it was Vader, Goldust, Mark Merrow, and a debuting Steve Blackman.
Who they continuously said, this man is not a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
Then why are they letting him in the ring?
I don't know.
He's a martial arts expert, but...
I don't care.
Kung Fu and Karate illegal in the sport of professional wrestling?
Dude, I was just happy to see Steve Blackman on Steve Blackman on a pay-per-view. I'm a big fan of Steve Blackman, I'm sorry.
What is that guy up to these days?
I know he got really sick a few years ago. Like, he went over to some country to do something, and he got, like, really, like ridiculously sick. Like, he had some kind of, like, Ebola virus of some sort.
What, did he, like, shit out his innards?
I don't know. Yeah, well, he was basically, like, half dead, and then he came back, and they
came back from the dead.
Yeah, WWE did a whole, like, where are they now on him.
And really?
Yeah, it's on WWE.com. Look him up.
Wow.
But
this is when things started picking up.
Yeah, things started picking up, and this was his debut.
You know, the British Bulldog wiped his butt with the American flag during this match. Look where he's at now.
Yeah, is anybody alive? Well, Neidhart's still alive.
Mark Merrow is still alive.
Mark Merrow, yeah. LaFond.
Team USA is alive.
Team USA is alive, yep.
Phil LaFond and Jim Neidhart are still alive.
Yeah, Doug Furness, rest in peace. Yeah, this was a terrible match. And I love Furness and LaFond. You know that. So do you.
Well, this wasn't exactly, like a technical showdown for these guys to strut their stuff. Because if you remember when they debuted the Can-Am Express, they were going against British Bulldog and Owen Hart. And they were having some great matches. But unfortunately, Furness and LaFond never tasted that piece of tin that Michaels was talking about. Never tasted the gold. And which is a shame because these guys were extra talented, but fortunately they didn't have any personality, and that's what counts in the World Wrestling Federation. And but this wasn't that great of a match. Plus, Team USA was very dysfunctional. They couldn't get along.
Right. So, again, they didn't look good from the start. Even in the back with the promo, they lost. It was almost 20 minutes. Nothing really spectacular out of this.
Yeah, there was a few spectacular things. There was a point where British Bulldog power slammed Vader in the air, and then he picked him up and did a standing suplex on him. That was really impressive.
Okay, I guess. All right.
You weren't impressed by that?
No, a lot of this pay-per-view was hard to watch, actually. But the next match made up for it, though. Unless you have any more spots in that other match that you wanted to...
No, that was only the... Vader getting hit with the ring bell was interesting. But yeah, other than that, it wasn't that great of a match. Actually, this is, as we discussed, this pay-per-view is not great. And I'm actually looking at the time. We're only 15 minutes into the second hour. And really, the meat and potatoes are for like the last two matches.
Well, I thought Kane and Mankind told a good story. That was fun to watch.
That was a decent match, but it was more for me. It was just more what's it called? Mankind just getting his ass whipped.
Well, yeah, that's what he did.
But this was just like gruesome. Like there was that power slam off the top rope onto the floor.
Yeah.
That was I saw that. That seemed worse than falling through the cage onto the ring.
I totally love 1997 Kane and not 2014 Kane. Just putting that
Well,
out
the guy
there.
Could still move around back then.
I'm just putting that out there. I mean, he can still move now. I'm just not a fan of him, and he just doesn't belong on TV anymore.
Well, fans are not really big fans of the WWE at the moment. That's right. Been established.
Right, yeah. The next match, the Road Warriors, Ahmed Johnson, Sloppy Ahmed Johnson, Ken Shamrock defeating the Nation of Domination, the Rock, Farooq, Kama Mustafa,
Well, the Rock really got the shine during this
D'Lo
match.
Brown. Yeah, well, you know what? Here's a match, and this is probably the first and last time I'll ever say this, but the Road Warriors, Hawk especially, just looked absolutely out of place in this match.
No, I think especially at this time, like these dudes were just kind of, they were coasting.
A little old in the tooth, maybe.
Yeah, man. Like I remember when they did the whole LOD 2000. Like,
oh, that was even worse than this.
Yeah, it was worse than this. And when they had Hawk playing off of his alcoholism, and they were trying to bring a new member into the LOD with draws. It just wasn't working. It's like, you know, there was that time, that place, you know, with NWA, with WCW, with WWF in the early 90s, and it worked perfectly. But this time around, it was just kind of like it was kind of like the Dudleys when they were their last run in the WWF. Like they just kept putting the belts back on them. Like they didn't really have any good challengers or great opponents. And, you know, some of the guys that we've been talking about, you know, during this pay-per-view and just in general in the WWF, there wasn't really any, like, great tag teams. There wasn't really any great competition. It just seemed like, hey, we got the Road Warriors right now or Legion of Doom in WWF. And we got nothing better to do. Let's throw the straps on them. Same thing that happened to the Dudleys. And we have this match.
So they fight the Nation of Domination. Like you mentioned, The Rock was the focal point of this group now.
The Rock bottomed Hawk and got the first win.
Yep, he did. Now, you know, this is when The Rock was kind of like trying to take control of the Nation. Him and Farooq were butting heads at this point.
Which was actually a pretty decent storyline.
It was.
I remember while this was happening, you know, it was very clear that Farooq is the leader, but the Rocky Maivia, aka The Rock, was really like after that time just being Rocky Maivia, the blue chipper, as they were calling him, as JR was calling him at the time, really stepped up his game when he joined the Nation of Domination. Like you could tell instantly, like, there was huge things on the horizon for this guy. And when I was a kid watching all this go down, I fucking hated The Rock. It took me a long time to become a Rock fan till I really saw the genius of this guy. And, you know, moments like when The Rock gifted Farooq a photo of himself.
Yes.
For his birthday was utterly genius. And the discontent that was happening in this group was perfect to, you know, end the group. The Nation of Domination was a great team, but, you know, could only last for so long. The whole black militant thing, especially when it was very clear that they were going in that direction, but they weren't trying to be like overtly like, hey, this is a black militant group. So they had like white people like Owen Hart in the group, and PG-13 was a part of it, rapping to the ring. But, you know, it could only go on for so long. And with a talent like The Rock, with how advanced he was coming at that point, especially on the mic.
Yeah,
they couldn't keep this dude in that group for too long.
What made it good for me is that everybody involved on their team can work. The Rock, Farouk, of course, Kama, and I love D'Lo Brown. Big D'Lo Brown fan. I always was.
Frog Splash.
Yeah, I thought D'Lo was a fine, fine wrestler. I don't like Ahmed Johnson. He was very, very sloppy. Mentioned that a million times. Ken Shamrock.
USWA champion.
Yeah, unfortunately. Ken Shamrock. I mean, never a dull moment with Ken Shamrock. I dug him. He adapted well to pro wrestling.
Well, he started out as a pro wrestler before he went and did the whole mixed martial arts thing.
Yeah. This match went 20 minutes too long, though. You know, I thought it could have been shorter, but they had to, you know, drag time because of they won many matches anyway. But
yeah, surprisingly, there was four Survivor Series matches, but they were all pretty short.
All right, so your next match was for the Intercontinental Championship.
Shortest match of the night.
Yeah, 4 minutes and 3 seconds. Stone Cold Steve Austin, a year into the bottom line, 316. Now he's in full crazy mode now. And he is the man. Stone Cold is the up and coming flagship of the company.
And he was not over in Canada.
No, he was not, because Owen
Hart hated his guts.
Owen Hart was.
Yo, I got to throw this out there real quick. This crowd, especially what was that one? It was an In Your House where they had like the 10-man teams, right?
Canadian Stampede, right? Is that what
Canadian Stampede?
Yeah.
Crowd was absolutely rabid at that event.
Canada comes correct. There was a wrestling show I was supporting when I first started the podcast, which was Women Who Love Wrestling. It was two Canadian chicks, Mel and Corey, and we spoke a few times about the crowds in Canada. And
those are real wrestling fans.
They are, and there's a lot of history with pro wrestling in Canada, Grand Prix, and I mean, it just, you know, the Rougeaus and Rick Martel and Dino Bravo, a lot of decent talent.
Who?
Yeah, it's your boy, Dino Bravo.
He's not my boy.
I'll never
say that name on this podcast ever again.
A lot of good talent came out of Montreal. Kevin Steen.
Hey, Maniac Matt, why don't you have like a me gunning down Dino Bravo in his home watching Golden Girls joke?
Yeah, so Austin had his neck broken by Owen Hart. And I was at that match at SummerSlam, so this was the revenge, pretty much.
Yeah, this was the revenge, and revenge on Canada, too.
I guess. I mean, I don't know what the...
Yo, do you remember what really started the whole Canada versus the USA thing?
It was Bret Hart, really. Like, he just, you know, I don't like...
He was bitching and crying like the bitch that he is.
Yeah.
And, because what was it? Like, a lot of that came from his discontent with, like, losing the title to Sid in that cage match, right?
Right. You know what, though? I think, you know, once you become that complacive and you put yourself in and you're a top guy, I can't really – I don't know what went on behind the scenes. But I think – I feel like you kind of put yourself out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, here's a guy who's been on top for a minute. You know, he's at the World by the Balls. He's probably one of the best technical wrestlers ever. And now you have an upstart in Shawn Michaels giving you that professional competition. And I don't think he was ready for it.
I don't know. It's you know, Bret Hart's an interesting wrestler. And I say this because in the past, even before, you know, this whole Canada versus USA feud went down, whenever the guy had a match where it was like, you know, face versus face, and somebody had to play the bad guy, it was always Bret Hart who would, you know, play the heel for the match. And, you know, he would expertly, you know, time and deliver, you know, some heel moments in those kind of matches, where to the point where you would think, like, does this guy have a chip on his shoulder for the person that he's facing? So part of me wants to question, you know, bring back that question from earlier, you know, was this thing a work? Or was Bret Hart really that good as a heel, you know, that he could whine and complain, but in reality, that wasn't really the case.
Ajax.
So I don't know. I still, in my personal opinion, I don't think it was a work, but the guy was really good at whining and complaining and being a bitch.
Ajax wants to know who was worse, the British or the Canadians?
Fucking British. They're always the worst.
So that brings us to the title match, Bret Hart versus HBK for the WWF Championship. Now, here's the build-up. The build-up is, again, like Dave mentioned, this whole thing against this whole feud with HBK was, you know, I don't like your lifestyle. I don't like what you're doing. I'm more clean-cut. I'm the flagship of this company. And
he's
and
a real man.
He's a real man. And then
he's not posing in any girly magazines.
So, of course, now you have the cocky Shawn Michaels starting up DX and crotch chopping and, you know, stealing the show. He was the showstopper. That was his deal.
Yeah, man. Even though his title reign wasn't the most popular, so the guy worked his ass off.
He did.
And,
you know,
they're both guys in a similar situation. They started off in tag teams. They rose up through the intercontinental ranks, and they both finally, though reluctantly, you know, on Vince's behalf, became, you know, world champions. Because they were both guys that didn't really fit the mold of a WWF champion, but somehow, you know, made it to the top. So these guys both have similar backgrounds. Fans are going rabid. I'm sure you remember this too, Phil. You know, a lot of Canadian fans and a lot of U.S. fans were they had legit heat against each other.
Yeah.
Like when they would interview the fans before the matches, the American fans, like, you know, as much as I love my Americans, they would come off extremely, like, ignorant towards the Canadian fans. And so, and the Canadian fans actually came, as you would say, correct with their assessment of the situation, but, you know, they too were getting caught up in the whole U.S. versus Canada thing. So it wasn't just a feud that was happening between the wrestlers, but it was a feud between the fans over literally, like, what country was better. It was, for me as a wrestling fan, even at that age, I thought it was really, it just showed how ignorant a lot of fans were. Not trying to be a heel or anything like that. It just showed how stupid some wrestling fans were. But it made for a great television show because the Canadian fans were rabid, especially during this match, which we'll get into soon. And just the fact that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were a mirror of each other, and this was their very last match against each other, and it was about to, the powder keg was about to blow in Canada that night.
What really pisses me off, though, is that, you know, Bret sees an opportunity to go and negotiate with WCW, right? So he tells Vince, listen, they offered me, you know, X, Y, and Z, and I really don't want to leave, but, you know, they're going to take care of me, you know, and
so, he didn't want to turn down $9 million.
Right, and Vince was like, listen, I can't give you that kind of money because, A, I'm not giving out guaranteed contracts no more, you know, and B,
he wasn't giving out guaranteed contracts ever.
Well, no, but that's what the industry had become, you know, and then that set the standard, obviously, for Bischoff and, you know, with the open wallet that Turner had, but that's besides the point. That's another podcast. But, you know, during this time, he's still on top. Vince is sticking to his loyalty to Shawn Michaels. I mean, to Bret Hart. And to Shawn Michaels for giving him the rub for the feud. So my thing is now, it's like, you know, you knew. Listen, here it is. You're not going to resign. Okay? Drop the belt. So Bret's like, no, I'm not dropping a belt in my home country on a pay-per-view. I'll do it on Raw. I'll do it somewhere else. I'm not doing it in Canada on pay-per-view.
Yeah, which was just in my opinion, especially, you know, we saw how it all went down. It would have been fantastic if he just played ball.
Yeah.
It would have still worked out.
Yeah. Because think about it. You're not going to go. I would, you know, even if he lost the belt, and listen, the match was not even that long.
No, it's about 12 minutes. 12. But I want to throw this out there. A lot of people, I've heard it like from a few people here and there. Supposedly a lot of people talk shit about Bret Hart because when I say people, I mean workers. They talk shit about him for, having replicas of the belts inside of his house, like their trophies, you know, him taking his role a little too serious. And I have to agree, because especially if he's presenting the idea of dropping the belt on television the next night saying, hey, you know, I worked real hard in this company, so I'm forfeiting the belt. Like, I don't know. That just doesn't work for, you know, television, for the storylines that are being perpetuated. You know, that stuff is all, you know, good and well if there's no competition, but he had excellent competition in the form of Shawn Michaels that night.
All I'm saying is, like, it would have worked out if he would have dropped the belt.
Yeah.
You know,
plus, these guys had beef for so long. If I remember correctly, he just didn't want to drop the belt to him.
Yeah, but his excuse was, I didn't want to do it on a pay-per-view in Canada. Yes. So, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, there were many factors going into why he didn't want to drop the belt that night.
So, we know what happens. You know, about 11 minutes in, Brett gets caught up. Shawn gets him in the sharpshooter.
Oh, and Shawn gives him this weak ass clothesline before he gets him into the sharpshooter.
Right. Yeah. So now the story is that they had an understanding that, you know, well, Brett said there was an understanding that Brett was gonna, like, they were gonna do a swerve. Like there was gonna be some kind of disqualification or a count out. And Vince didn't want that because Vince knew he wasn't coming back, and Vince also knew that he didn't want him to go to the WWE with the WWF title. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, now like Dave says, he hits him with a weak-ass clothesline, goes and gets the sharpshooter, and almost instantaneously, referee Earl Hebner calls for the bell.
Yeah, it was very SummerSlam 91-esque.
So now the bell rings. Hebner in the far left side of the screen makes a dash. When I mean dash, he ran like he stole something. He ran out of that ring. And like now, Shawn acting like he doesn't know why the bell rang. But now we know that Vince called for the bell. And in disgust, Bret Hart gets up, looks at Shawn. You could see him looking at Shawn, clearly looking at Shawn, then looking at Vince. Vince stood up because he was calling the action side at the ringside, and he spits a big loogie right in Vince's face.
Yeah, he hocked quite a loogie at Mr. McMahon.
Now, at this point, the fans are beside themselves, throwing shit in the ring, screaming curse words in French.
Well, first of all, the fans were crazy as hell, because there was a few times where there was some action during this match spilling into the crowd, and like they couldn't even get security in there to really push these fans back. Somehow they were able to do it, but these fans were like on top of each other, like it was the Amistad, and Shawn Michaels humping the flag, the Canadian flag. Snapping the flagpole and stabbing Bret Hart in the throat with it. These fans were rabid.
Yeah. And so now the fans are irate. Straight up. And Triple H comes running down. That's Shawn's boy. To escort the new champion back to the locker room.
Yo, and Shawn made a beeline to the back too.
Right. Of course, we know what happens. The confrontation doesn't end there with all these guys. Brett gets into it with Vince. it follows in the back. There was a closed room conversation. Brett punches, Mr. McMahon in the face, gives him a black eye. Brett's wife is outside the locker room with the kids, yelling at Sean and Triple H, like, you knew this. Your friends are off. How could you do this to us?
And they're acting like nothing happened. Like, they are so sorry that they did it.
Yeah, and she's like, you're full of shit. You know,
they it's like the mom and dad walked into the room when, like, they broke the TV or something.
It was sad. And like, you know, reliving that, to be honest with you, was kind of weird watching that again. Because now, like, you know, you see it for the first time and you're like, man, that's fucked up. And then you're like, you watch it again and you're like, you know what? I don't feel that bad, you know? I don't feel that bad at all.
No, it was, well, at the end of the day, it seems like it's just like two guys, you know, really just like overdoing it with the competition, you know, in the ranks. You know, both guys wanted to be on top. They both wanted to be, you know, the best in the company. They wanted to be the face of the company. And I'm sure, you know, on both guys' parts, they were overworked, they were underappreciated, and, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, obviously in Bret Hart's case, underpaid, you know, despite what these guys were probably already making at the time. And it's just like, you know, problems on top of problems. I'm not saying that – I don't want to say that Bret Hart was the bad guy, and I don't want to say that – Shawn Michaels was the good guy. You know, both guys were in some pretty interesting situations where it didn't seem like either guy would make a rational decision, you know, going into it. But, you know, Vince being who Vince is, had to make a power play and had to make that decision. And I don't know if it was me, but I definitely remember watching this pay-per-view when it aired. And it seems like the network version cut out a lot of the ending. Do you agree, Phil?
They did.
Because there was a lot more than that. Like, I remember Bret Hart, you know, making the WCW spelling it out with his finger. That wasn't in the end either.
Nope.
So I was a little bit disappointed in the network for cutting that out. I don't know if there was any cursing or what that was involved in it, but they cut out a lot.
That was
a part of the original airing of that pay-per-view.
I have the original on VHS.
Oh, you'll have to
have to pull it out.
Turn that into a DVD
for me. Definitely will do that. I'm going to throw some facts at you, all right? A couple of reasons why I thought Bret Hart deserved to get screwed, okay? He got approached.
I love it.
He got approached by WCW to jump ship, right? In 96. Yes. For $9 million, whatever the hell it was. But then, you know, Vince gave him a fucking 20-year contract offer, but for a lot less. So obviously you're going to go with the more money. Had a tough decision. After that, now he turns heel, goes in a completely new direction. Of course, he's a heel in the U.S. He's a face in Canada, and it went successful. Of course, now we know why, you know, it didn't work out for Vince because he wanted him to stay. And Brett can get an offer from WCW, and Vince didn't want to match it, right? Mm. So the biggest issue is, you know, was Brett, you know, now that Brett was champion, you know, they had to get the belt off him. So make a long story short, I'm going to give you a couple reasons. The first reason is legit, him and Michaels didn't get along. They had a pro rivalry. It got personal. Brett couldn't seem to get along with him and vice versa. Brett would talk down Sean's mailing list, like you mentioned, right? Brett's rumored promiscuity with Sonny that Sean made mention of. Sonny Days, if you remember that promo.
Oh yeah.
Sean refused to return the Mania 12 favor and put Brett over in that match, and Brett refused to do the same, which ultimately led to the screw job, right? And then there's the Attitude Era. You know, Brett didn't quit. He didn't really fit in with the mold of where they were heading, like I mentioned before. And wrestling, he's a wrestling traditionalist, if that makes sense to anybody.
Yeah.
Brett disagreed with a lot of the gratuitous direction that the company was going in. And he was a snob, to be honest with you. You know, and another thing, too, Vince always did right by Brett's family. They went above and beyond. They included them in storylines, putting them over as a legendary family. There were multiple times where Brett would let where Vince would let Brett's family wrestle for a paycheck. In 93, where they had the whole Hart family in there.
Yeah.
Taking on Shawn Michaels and his knights, if you remember that.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
And there was no demand for a Keith and Bruce match in the WWE.
Brett, with the spots leading up to Survivor Series, discredits everything WWE did for his family, including his dad. You know, Stu was integrated into a lot of storylines, like I mentioned. He had a love and desire for the business, and when we saw Stu or even Brett's mother on TV, it was out of respect to the family. There's always at ringside, always you know, when they fought each other in 94, man, with the whole towel thing.
Yeah.
Brett should have done business the right way, I thought, okay? And then there was tension between Brett and Vince. You know, Vince was the voice on Raw. Every week, Vince would sit along ringside and, you know, do play-by-play. But there are a lot of instances where Brett showed his frustration in creative in front of Vince on Raw and embarrassed him. Like, he would, you know, make references and give him dirty looks and walk by him and knock a monitor over. He would curse at him, something. There was one instance where Brett, with the Hart Foundation, approached the announce table during a match where Brett berated Vince for allowing Shawn Michaels to be the special guest referee against The Undertaker in SummerSlam 97. I was there for that. And he just berated him. To the point where you, like, legit, after going home watching it on tape, you saw, like, the disgust in Vince. It wasn't, like, Mr. McMahon disgust. It was really, like, Vince being pissed off, you know? There was a verbal exchange. Brett then attacks Vince, and they lock onto each other, like I mentioned. It was just bad, and the tension kept growing and growing and growing. And then I mentioned before another reason. They didn't want the championship on Nitro. That would have been terrible, bringing the belt to Nitro. It would have sucked before Medusa even did it.
I don't know. I would have loved to have seen that.
Of course, as a fan, absolutely. As an owner of the company, do you want to see it happen?
Hell no.
Exactly. Vince did everything he could to appease Bret Hart. Anything, which didn't make any sense.
He just couldn't give him any more money.
They gave him, like, there was a bunch of scenarios. In weeks leading up to Survivor Series, Vince presented many, many different scenarios for Brett's exit. The main issue was Brett didn't want to do the job, like I mentioned, in Canada, Montreal, or Ottawa on Raw. So that was 2 weeks, two days in a row he didn't want to drop the belt. So there were a ton of scenarios. Vince came up with the scenario where Brett would lose to Shawn clean and still be able to give a farewell address on Raw, which would have been in Ottawa. And then it wasn't enough, you know. Brett offered to drop the belt to guys like Austin, Shamrock, Vader, Taker, or Mankind, but it was unclear that it was unclear if he didn't want to drop it to Michaels. Obviously, you and I think he didn't want to drop it because it was a beef. I mentioned the disqualification thing that didn't happen, and then he became bitter, you know, and he wants. Brett wants to break the honor tradition thing with a champion leaving wrestling company, you know, while being on top, you know, but it's always been a tradition when a superstar loses his final match. That was, you know, on his way out of the territory. That was the tradition. Brett didn't want to do that.
He didn't want to do the job.
And pisses me off, as old school as he was, it was kind of shocking that he didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know? And, of course, WCW being WCW didn't really weren't able to kind of capitalize on the sympathy that a majority of the fans had for Brett. Vince sent their biggest friggin' babyface in the industry at that point directly to his company, you know, and that was the thing. So, and, you know, the last reason is the launch of the McMahon character, Mr. McMahon. Which kind of, I think, what better way to launch it than to do the screw job? But I don't think Vince wanted to do that. I think this forced Vince to be a character. I think him being on TV all the time and him going in that direction with Austin and The Rock, I think it almost forced him to be that guy. You know, you heard stories of who came up with it. Vince Russo wants to take credit for it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stories. I don't think Vince planned to screw Bret Hart. You know, I don't think he did it at all. It was just a thing where he didn't want to play ball, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So I hope I got my point across, and I hope that you see a better light. You guys can make your own opinions about it. I mean, it's still a topic to this day. Pastor Sadell says, let's blame Bill Watts. Why not?
Yeah, I think it'll always be a hot-button topic because, you know, obviously people are still questioning whether it was a work or a shoot or you know, what could have happened to Bret Hart if his career continued, whether it was in WCW or continued in WWE. You know, a lot of unanswered questions are there. Because, you know, especially with Bret Hart's move to WCW, it wasn't like the guy was, you know, losing touch with his wrestling ability. The guy was still fantastic. But, you know, when he switched over to WCW, a lot of those great matches that he was having weren't the same quality. And especially when his brother passed, you know, a lot of things just went out the window.
Well, that was his doing. You know, that was his doing of them, you know, him going there, and he even mentioned it. He's like, I was lost.
Yeah.
You know, I was lost, and I didn't want to, you know, didn't know what to do. And then he got the concussion, like you mentioned, and shit didn't fly after that. But
yeah.
Kind of like, you know, he kind of did it to himself. You know, here's a guy who, you know, earned the respect of everybody in the business, got to a point where he could, you know, play his own game and make his own rules, and staying loyal and taking a pay cut was not in the fold for him. He thought he was worth more. He saw guys coming in that were worth probably just as much or more, being Austin, Michaels, Taker. These guys were all main players. Bret could have still hung with them. I thought it was just an ego thing. And, you know, I thought it was totally wrong, and you know what? Bret screwed Bret, and I didn't believe that when Vince first said it, but now I do. Bret screwed Bret. After reading, you know, watching these interviews and then doing my research and getting all my points across, I think, you know, is a thing where I'm not siding with Michaels. I don't think Michaels had anything to do with it. You know, Michaels was there. Listen, I'm here for a paycheck. You know, you're the boss, I'm the horse, that's kind of thing. I don't think Sean had any kind of creative control of his character at that point. He was still coming into his own, if that makes any sense. And, you know, that's just my opinion. You know, that's just my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that. You know, I don't know if that's where you agree, if you disagree. I think Bret screwed Bret. That's the bottom line.
I agree.
All right, so we agree that that Bret Hart was, iconic still. Lost in WCW, tragic losses to his family. And
it literally ruined his career.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't that something? You know, the guy who obviously there's still a lot of people out there that are huge Bret Hart fans, and when he came back to WWE. It was a huge deal, especially him just putting aside his differences with Shawn Michaels, and they put out that fantastic sit down interview with Jim Ross for the DVD Blu-ray. And you know, Bret Hart is still a big deal to a lot of people, regardless of him going to WCW and all that. And a lot of people followed him over into WCW. It was a big coup on Eric Bischoff's part.
Yeah,
but sadly. Literally, just changing to a different organization literally ruined the man's career and his life to a degree.
I thought the
took
stuff
him many years to come back after that. Had a friggin' stroke when he was riding his bicycle.
The match you did with Benoit for the Owen Hart tribute was pretty cool. I thought that was
cool. With Harley Race as a special guest referee or a special guest ring announcer.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that.
One of his few great matches in WCW.
If Bret Hart would have came in right when the NWO got hot, like in 96, I think Bret Hart would have been a main player. And now think about this. Now you had Savage, you had Sting, you had Luger, you had Flair still at that point, all main players. Can you imagine putting Bret Hart right in the shit of it, right in the beginning of it? That would have been perfect. But then again, you would now if you would have put him in that scenario, then maybe you wouldn't have the Sting Crow character that made him so popular. You know?
Wait, the Jim Crow character?
No. The Crow.
Oh, my bad.
Right. So, you know, a lot of scenarios, a lot of, I know you don't do what ifs, but what ifs are big in throwbacks because, you know, you had these different situations where you know, guys were talented, but how many guys in the WWF in like, you know, mid-80s that never got that push, the mid-card push, the JYDs of the world, the Paul Orndorffs of the world, these guys never got
Kurt Hennig.
Yeah, they never got the push because of the politics.
Yeah.
WCW didn't have that problem because it became, you know, Hulk Hoganopoly at that point when he signed on in '94. You know,
there's a lot of there was a lot of grade B players out there, but there were very few grade A.
Yeah,
guys who could take the ball and run.
Yeah, the Rick
like
Rudes.
Like Hogan and Flair did.
Yeah, the Rick Rudes of the world. I mean, you had so many guys that, you know, put themselves out there and never got the rub.
They never made it to the grade A level.
But here's a guy who had the rub, had everything going for him, jumped ship for more money, and it just fell apart for him. And that's pretty much it, man. I mean, it's I kind of feel bad. You know, but I don't because I think like he made his own bed. I mean, I don't wish death on anybody. I loved Owen Hart and I loved, you know, I don't want anybody to have a stroke either. But, you know, I think Bret knew the situation when he got there. It was like, you know, he knew that it was going to be totally different. Totally different.
Yeah.
So, and that's pretty much.
Little did he know that, the whole WCW operation was just complete chaos.
Right.
Total chaos.
That's it, man. So that's our throwback for this week. Like I said, you know, in the beginning of the show, turnbuckle throwbacks.com is up. Dave, do you want to plug the contest again, man? Because we got to.
Yes, because we need more than just one guy. You know, I'll even announce what the prize is going to be. It's going to be a copy, underlined, bold, italicized, the word copy. Of the New Japan Dynamite Kid DVD set.
Which I have right here sitting in front of me.
Which, unless you got a couple $100, you ain't getting anytime soon, or a region-free DVD player. And this will be a working copy that you can watch and enjoy. But the contest is, and I'll post the photo again, is to create a stable from an actual photo of Jim Duggan, Undertaker, Papa Shango, Virgil, and Slick. Do a fantasy warfare. Create them as a stable. Give them a name. Give them a reason for being. Give them a storyline. Have them go against another faction or go against a champion, whatever. And then, book their demise as well.
Yep.
And the best story will be read on the air.
On the day of the...
Spooktacular,
yeah. So, you know, you email your angles to us at turnbucklethrowbacks1@gmail.com. There's a link to the email on the website. There's a link to the email on the Facebook page. And when you send the email, send Dave and I a Facebook message and let us know that you sent the email in case we don't check it right away.
Yes, because it's not like the email's bumping, but we need to make that email bumping.
Word up. Word to your sister. Now you do that.
So I'm not a big fan of what ifs, but I'd like to hear everybody's what if on this situation.
What situation?
The Duggan stable.
Oh, yeah. Pastor as Hacksaw Duggan. You know, Mid South. Do whatever. It doesn't matter. That picture needs to have that picture has to have all the guys in it in a stable. Give them a character. Matter of fact, give them any character you want.
Yeah.
But sell it.
But they have to be a stable together, right?
as those characters, exactly.
And run with it, have fun with it.
Yeah, and like
the whole point of the show is for people to laugh. God damn it! So start laughing and having fun.
Can you repeat the stable again? It is Papa Shango. well, comma, whatever you want to call him, Charles Wright.
Pop Shango.
Jim Duggan, Undertaker, right?
Yes.
And Virgil, right?
Virgil and the Reverend Slick.
And the Reverend Slick.
It has to be those precise gimmicks.
Next, we're going to throw back to the interview with hard worker Bobby Walker. No, it's Adrian
Street. I'm going to track him down, Tony C.
No, Adrian Street's coming on next week, man. The exotic one. All right. So listen for that. And
get some fashion tips, Phil.
Thanks, Dave. I'll do that.
Ask him where he's get his feather boas.
Right. He's actually working on a musical, so I'm sure he'll talk about boas a lot.
Hmm.
Anyway, with that being said, guys, we're gonna take this home. I want to wish everybody a very happy, safe, blessed Thanksgiving if you celebrate it. Again, you know, what are you thankful for? Put it on a Facebook page. I want to hear what everybody's thankful for this year. I hope you enjoy your families this weekend. And Dave, have a good Thanksgiving. What are you up to?
You too, my friends.
Yeah,
to you and your family, have a happy Thanksgiving.
I will be reporting for duty at 0800 hours tomorrow, so my Thanksgiving will be on Friday. I'm going to do a little Thanksgiving dinner when time allows, because I, you know, have to take one for the team and work tomorrow.
Have mercy.
Yeah, so, you know, got to keep the city safe. Got to do my part as a first responder. And, you know, got to hold it down, man. It's what we do here in New York City.
Yeah.
So with that being said, guys, have a great week. We'll be back next week with Adrian Street and another kick-ass throwback. And then that'll leave us that much closer to the episode 100.
It's breathing down our neck, Phil.
Yep. So
spectacular on Friday the 19th.
That's right. So as a tribute to Thanksgiving... not many songs about Thanksgiving, unfortunately.
Adam Sandler's?
I have Sandler. That's what I have queued up. But there's really not like another Thanksgiving song, so that was the only one. And I played it last year. So I guess just keep it keep it real and do it every year. But guys, good night. Take care of yourselves, each other. Avoid the clap. Don't get arrested. Be kind to animals. And IWO for life. Good night, kids.
Happy Thanksgiving. Degeneration Joe.
Good night, kids. Happy Thanksgiving.
Peace.
They want to hear the Thanksgiving song. All right. All right. This is a Thanksgiving song. I hope you enjoy it. Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Oh, I love you. Cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should. Cause it's turkey to eat. So good. That clapping's messing my head up, man. I appreciate it. But I was trying to think of the next line. I'm like, all I hear is clapping. Here we go. Thanks anyways. Turkey for me, turkey for you. Let's eat the turkey in my big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with Betty Grable. Eat that turkey all night long. 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Turkey lurkey do and turkey lurkey dap. I eat that turkey, then I take a nap. Thanksgiving is a special night. Jimmy Walker used to say, with gravy and cranberry. Can't believe the Mets traded Darryl Strawberry. Turkey for you and turkey for me. Can't believe Tyson gave that girl VD.
Ooh, white meat, dark meat, you just can't lose. I fell off my moped and I got a bruise. Turkey in the oven and the buns in the toaster. I'll never take down my Cheryl Teague's poster. Wrap the turkey up in aluminum foil. My brother likes to masturbate with baby oil. Turkey and sweet potato pie. Sammy Davis Jr. only had one eye. Oh, turkey for the girls and turkey for the boys. My favorite kind of pants are corduroys. Gobble, gobble, boo, and gobble, gobble, giggle. I wish turkey only cost a nickel. Oh, I love turkey on Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.